All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
I'm Pat Kreitlow, still struggling through some whatever bug has got a hold of me, so I appreciate your patience as I try to get back among the land of the living here. At 7:15, we will talk live with Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign about that new report outlining how much outside political money poured into Wisconsin for the just completed elections. And Todd Alba joins us at 7:50 ahead of his 8 o'clock show on many of the Civic Media radio stations. We're also going to talk about Foxconn getting a new round of state credits because they've created a few more jobs, but they're still not answering the basic question of what do you do? What are you making there? So we'll explore that at 7:30. If you'd like to call in at some point, 715-388-7155. Or the usual Civic Media caller line is 844-967-2789. And Aaron Zommers is here with us as well. And Aaron, again, thanks for indulging me. You haven't had to dump the cough button on me too much, thankfully.
Nope, not yet. I see you've been staying hydrated. You said cough drops and everything. And yeah, I'm sure getting a lot of sleep last night or just during yesterday as well helped.
Getting a little bit, and somebody's going right back to it in about 52 minutes, believe me. I will call your attention on the subject of the record state budget surplus to a brilliant takedown of Robin Voss and the Republican argument for sending the bulk of the huge state budget surplus to the wealthy. Jay Bullock is a Milwaukee area teacher. He's been blogging for some 15 years, one of my absolute favorite people on social media when he writes about political issues. He put this online, and I'm paraphrasing a bit, and I'm taking out some of the naughty words, but he explains it as well as anybody can about what type of tax relief you should be giving with this kind of a budget surplus. Jay writes, "This is a con, the Republican position, a grift, flat-out wealth redistribution upwards, a veritable hoovering of poor and working-class tax dollars to be given to wealthy GOP donors as a return on investment in politicians like Robin Voss." But Jay, a reasonable man, says, "A tax cut simply returns my taxes I paid back to me. This isn't the same as the bad guy holding a poor man upside down, shaking some coins out of his pocket." Jay continues, "Oh, reasonable man, you fell for the con, not least because you're not the target audience for the type of tax cuts Voss and his ilk are pursuing. The GOP is cherry-picking the taxes to cut, especially the kinds of taxes that not everyone pays. Exhibit A is income taxes. True, income taxes make up more tax revenue than any other tax, about a quarter of the total state budget income. But for poor and working-class families, the income tax is not the biggest tax expense, especially for the bottom 40% of families by income." And Jay gives credit to fellow Milwaukee blogger Michael Bradley for the analysis. Bradley notes that those whose tax burden is mostly the income tax, well, they're in the upper brackets and are already not suffering from overall tax burdens in the way the poor and working class are as a percentage of income. That's because the poor and working class in Wisconsin instead pay a significant chunk of their income to the state through our state sales tax, and another significant chunk to their local municipalities in property taxes. While the total state tax burden, state income tax, sales, and local property taxes averages a little over 10%, for 95% of households by income, the wealthiest 5% pay about 7 to 8%. Let me say that again. I want to make that clear. For about 98% of households in Wisconsin, their total tax burden is a little over 10% of total income, but for the wealthiest 5%, their tax burden is only about 7 or 8%. So having seen that, you can imagine there's not a case to be made for cutting income taxes for the very wealthy, as their tax load already is the smallest percent of total household income. So Jay continues, are Republicans in the legislature planning to spend the surplus on, say, sales tax rebates? Of course not, just income taxes. And then, as Voss pointed out, just income taxes for the top end of the scale. But Jay, reasonable man says, the state has nothing to do with property taxes. You can't blame Voss and company for that. Yes, we can. The Wisconsin Policy Forum has been documenting for years now the way that the state budget squeezes local governments, whose only recourse is, of course, property taxes, which burden lower brackets more than the super rich. Schools have been going to referendums in record numbers. Counties, cities, towns, and villages are suffering under decimated shared revenue, which used to come to local governments from the state as it collects income taxes. That massive surplus, then, is the result not of overtaxing the wealthy, but of underfunding the state's obligations, obligations it could easily cover if the Republicans weren't hell-bent on giving billionaires more of your money. That's the grift. They're literally taking our money and giving it to those who don't need it while forcing your city to plow less, lay off police, and raise class sizes. And that's it from Jay Bullock, to which I would add this. There's a thick defense shield around the arrogance of Republican legislators. They know they don't have to give as much, but you can still ding, nick, chip that defense shield as long as you show you're paying attention over and over again. They're counting on you to just shrug and say, what are you going to do, and move on. Don't let them. We'll talk about how to empower you in the state budget process in the new year. At 7:30, we'll talk about Foxconn and we'll take your phone calls. But up next, Matt Rothschild on Up North News Radio.
I want to be a billionaire so freaking bad. Buy all of the things I never had.
If only we could all be billionaires and just get whatever we want at election time. Matt Rothschild joins us now from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Truly one of the watchdogs of Wisconsin politics. Watchdog meaning somebody that goes through the extra work of crunching the numbers and helping put it all into perspective. So, Matt, thanks for doing that, and thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Pat. It's always nice to be with you.
Well, okay, the most recent report that folks have talked about from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign is about the outside groups that spent money on Wisconsin elections. And by the way, just the statewide elections, we're not talking Senate and U.S. House, and that $93 million didn't just, you know, tickle the old record. It blew past it and then some. I mean, I don't know how to put this to you, because obviously you knew it was going to be a record amount, but did you actually have a number in your head? Did you think we could get close to $100 million in outside money?
Well, it's crazy, isn't it? $93 million spent on governor's race, attorney general's race, legislative races. I mean, as you point out, it shattered the old record by 50%. And if you go back to 2010, it's five times what this outside spending was in 2010. 2010, incidentally, and not coincidentally, was the year that Citizens United was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court, which said that corporations and super rich people could spend unlimited amounts of money with these outside groups to try to tell us who to elect and who not to elect. And so we've seen the disastrous consequences of that Citizens United decision.
When you look at them by in terms of the number of groups involved, you kind of see a bit of balance, if you want to call it that, in that 35 groups spent about $48 million to benefit Republicans, and about 36 groups spent $44 million to benefit Democrats. So a cynic would look at that and say, oh, well, that's basically parity. So if both sides are spending equal amounts, really, what's the big deal? But really, it comes back to the whole concept of, you know, who gets to communicate with voters, you know, who are in Wisconsin and who care about Wisconsin issues, and, you know, the outsized role that out-of-state money plays.
Yeah, and the voice and opinions of regular Wisconsinites are just drowned out by this outside money. Yes, there are some super rich folks on the left, and of course there are super rich folks on the right. And the Republican outside groups had a slight advantage, but not an astronomical advantage. But the point is that the people who are funding these groups are the super rich on both sides. And our democracy isn't supposed to be a tug of war between a handful of right-wing billionaires and a handful of left-wing billionaires. In a real democracy, we'd all have an equal tug on the rope, and we just don't. And I bet that every single one of your listeners, Pat, understands that they don't have the same voice. We don't have the same voice as the super rich as to who gets elected and what laws are passed and what policies are pursued.
Right. And we have been banging the drum repeatedly about Dick and Liz Eline and Diane Hendricks, billionaires who are taking advantage of this extremely flawed system. And as we've talked over and over again about the return on investment for Senator Ron Johnson, you know, the money that they spent, millions of dollars.
$29 million.
But you kind of equate it to like tipping your waitstaff at the restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, they spent... So the horribly misnamed Wisconsin Truth Pack was founded and primarily funded by the Elines and Diane Hendricks. And the Elines and Diane Hendricks were the folks who benefited to the tune of $200 million each in 1 year alone from the passage of that tax cut that Ron Johnson put through the legislature in Congress. And as a result, you know, what is their $29 million but a 15% tip or a little thank you note?
It is. I mean, it's a tip. You know, it's thanks for the hundreds of millions. Here's a little something for the effort.
And so it's not only that our voices are drowned out, but the opportunities for corruption arise very high. And we see that with the donations expenditures by Diane Hendricks and Eline. I mean, they're getting something on the backside of their donations to Ron Johnson, and our government shouldn't be up for sale.
No, I mean, this is as much an example of, you know, greasing palms as it comes. Matt Rothschild, the executive director of Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, is joining us. I'm looking at notes from a speech you gave to the League of Women Voters shortly after Election Day last month, and you covered this and so many of the other things that need to be addressed or fixed, the way that people get around, you know, contribution limits. One of them, for example, you talk about that. Well, Tim Michaels, you know, said he self-funded a lot of the money. His brothers were able to basically use the rules in a way that, while it doesn't directly, you know, incriminate them, come on, the dots are right there for the connecting.
So this is a real scandal, too. I mean, the Wisconsin legislature under Scott Walker totally rewrote our campaign finance laws in 2015. They doubled the amount that individuals could give to their favorite candidate for governors. That is rich individuals, because the limit's now $20,000. And who among your listeners, Pat, can give $20,000? But even worse than that, they rewrote the law to tear down any limit on donations to the political parties. Prior to that, there was a $10,000 de facto limit on how much you could give to the political parties. Now there's no limit whatsoever. So what did the Michaels brothers do when Tim finally said, I don't want to pour out all my money into my losing campaign? Two of his brothers gave $20,000 to Tim Michaels, the maximum legal limit. And then they turned around and gave $1.5 million each to the Republican Party of Wisconsin, which, guess what, turned around and gave $3 million in change back to the Tim Michaels campaign. So they use the Republican Party of Wisconsin as a laundromat here. And it just makes a joke on our ability to limit what an individual can give to a political candidate. And it's just, you know, we got to fix that problem. That's outrageous.
It really is. And again, for folks that might have missed the numbers before, each of the Michaels brothers gave $1.5 million to the Republican Party. So about $3 million total. And not long after that, the Republican Party gave $3 million to Tim Michaels. And so it was, you know, you can read that as a, you know, de facto gift far and above the contribution limits. But again, they're just making a mockery out of the system. And it's not something that, unfortunately, is going to, you know, change immediately, because you've got a legislature where, again, this can't be said enough. Tony Evers won the governor's race with 51% of the vote, 51-48. Is the state assembly basically 51-48? No. Republicans have nearly a two-thirds majority, and will probably end up with a two-thirds majority in the state Senate as well, further illustrating between, you know, not just the money issues, Matt, but the gerrymandering. of how rigged things are these days.
Yeah, the gerrymandering that Robin Voss committed this time around is really egregious. It's even worse than the horrible one that they did in 2011. And I was there when Robin Voss was testifying about the maps that he and Devin Lemahieu drew. There were only two people who testified in favor of those maps, and it was Robin Voss and Devin Lemahieu. They couldn't find one Wisconsin citizen to testify in favor of their rigged maps, and there were about 200 of us who signed up to testify against. And I was there while Robin Voss was on the witness stand, where he admitted that he used partisanship in the drawing of the maps, which is to say, he confessed to the crime of gerrymandering. He looked at the maps and looked at how districts were voting, who was voting Democrat and who was voting Republican, and drew the maps to favor Republicans. I mean, look, in this last election up in the Northwest, Douglas, Ashland, and Bayfield counties, they all went to Evers by 57 or 58%. And yet there's not a single Democrat representing those 57% of the population of those counties in the state legislature. There's not a state assembly person, and there's not a state senator, because those maps are rigged.
They are. And again, this is something that is going to be with us for a bit. And the thing is not to walk away from it, but to continue to beat that drum and remind people of a crime that basically is in progress right now. And we'll get to ways to, at least start to try to turn things around in just a minute. But I want to get to those folks who will be like, well, Democrats too. Yes, like I said, there were Democratic groups out there. But you also pointed out something interesting about the 10 individuals who gave that $20,000 maximum donation to Governor Tony Evers, which, again, he appreciated, needed, used. But those 10 biggest donors, one of these things is not like the others.
Yeah, I mean, I'm against big money coming from outside Wisconsin telling us who to vote for here in Wisconsin. And of Evers' biggest donors, 9 of the 10 were from outside of Wisconsin. Some were from California. Some were from the East Coast. I mean, why should a doctor in California tell us or try to influence who should be governor of Wisconsin?
That's just it. When you have money like that, and something I certainly saw a lot as a legislator and as a candidate for Congress, is you have very wealthy folks in either very blue or very red areas who feel like, they can't really make a difference locally. So they look for opportunities around the country to send money. And again, while that might sound well-intentioned, is that really the system we want of, the wealthiest around the country can kind of pick and choose what elections they play in?
Yeah, I don't think it is. And our politics have become so nationalized now that the super rich on both sides, are looking at those contested states like Wisconsin and throwing their money around. But they, they couldn't find Sheboygan on a map. They don't know how to pronounce half the towns in Wisconsin. So why should they be dominating our airwaves? And part, again, of the problem is that the legislature under Walker made it possible for people to give unlimited donations to the political parties here in Wisconsin. Beforehand, the most that a super rich person in California could give to the Dems was $10,000. And now they can give unlimited amounts of money, and some are scraping the sky with their donations.
Mm-hmm. Now, it will be obviously best if we could finally amend the Constitution once and for all, and also take action on the state level about gerrymandering and campaign finance rules. There's not a lot that can be done about the U.S. Supreme Court in this day and age, but there sure as heck is something people out there can do about the Wisconsin Supreme Court makeup, isn't there?
Yeah, one of the biggest news stories of this year is that Pat Rogensack, the arch reactionary former Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, is stepping down. And so that means that the Wisconsin Supreme Court would be 3-3 liberal conservative with her off the court. And the person who gets elected in the April election will determine the ideological balance of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And so that's a really important election for folks. There'll be a primary in February, and then the final will be in April. And so I'm encouraging all your listeners to go out and vote, both in the primary, but especially in April, so that we can have a Wisconsin Supreme Court that is a little more open. Let's remember, Pat Rogensack was one of the three arch reactionaries on the Wisconsin Supreme Court who was perfectly willing to throw out tens of thousands of votes and hand the election over to Donald Trump in the case that Donald Trump brought against the state of Wisconsin, claiming that there was all sorts of shenanigans happening in that vote, which weren't happening, of course.
Right, right.
And so good riddance to Pat Rogensack, and let's have a more decent, more reasonable justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Let's keep people involved, and that's what you always end with. And folks, wisdc.org is the website to go to learn more, to be a contributor, or to take some other kind of action. Matt Rothschild, always great to talk to you. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Up North News Radio continues after this.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Damn, it feels good to be a gangster. A real gangster type player plays his cards right. A real gangster type player never runs his mouth.
Honestly, any reference from Office Space is going to work when you talk about Foxconn forever and ever. And we're going to get into the one question that is asked in that movie and asked so often about Foxconn.
What would you say you do here?
And again, we're still kind of waiting to find out. In an article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel written by Corinne Hess, the headline says, Foxconn says it now employs more than 1,000 people in Wisconsin. What are they doing? For a second year in a row, Foxconn's been awarded state tax credits for its development in Racine County. Further, in interviews with foreign media, the company makes grandiose claims for Wisconsin, but the company's actual work remains a bit of a mystery. Foxconn had gotten $37.4 million to date for meeting various job and investment benchmarks outlined in a state contract. Remember, that state contract with Foxconn was renegotiated by Tony Evers when he took over. Prior to that, the Foxconn contract, which was riddled with terrible assumptions and promises that could never be kept, was going to cost the state in the $3 to $4 billion range. And instead, Governor Evers renegotiated it and took down substantially the responsibility of state taxpayers. Now, Foxconn still gets some credits, but nothing like they would have if Scott Walker had won another term back in 2018. In April of 2021, the state revised that contract to say that there would be a creation total of about 1,454 jobs, not the 13,000 that former President Trump was talking about when he showed up for the groundbreaking. But, you know, we're still kind of wondering what they do there. And from an economic standpoint, what do we need to know? I mean, we're giving credits to a company that's not doing anything remotely close to what they are said they were going to be doing later on. When asked by the Journal Sentinel what employees in Wisconsin are working on, spokespeople for the company directed attention to Digitimes Asia, a daily newspaper in China that focuses on the IT industry. And in the article, the USA chairman for Foxconn, Fuming Fu, said the company's site, quote, try to follow along with this one, focuses on server and storage equipment production while also becoming Foxconn's first step into the green energy sector with its production of microinverters for solar power. Sure sounds like they're still just trying whatever, you know, might throw whatever at the wall and see if it sticks or not. The article went on to say, the site has also started to assist U.S. solar power and battery system suppliers to produce the microinverters. This can be viewed as Foxconn's first large-scale involvement in the green energy industry. And Corinne writes, a microinverter is a type of solar technology that is installed on each individual solar panel. There's just no way to incorrectly frame just how bad this could have been, this boondoggle, had Governor Evers and others not taken care of business here and took taxpayers off the hook. And frankly, I am so surprised that more outstate Republican legislators did not pay a price from taxpayers up north who said, you gave all that money to Foxconn. That's money that would have come here to, you know, work on our county highways and our schools and things like that. And it didn't. And, you know, we'll continue to follow the money, but we'd really like to follow the product. And I will again say, I would be very happy if Foxconn becomes a success with about 1,400 employees and has a stable product line and makes it. After all, that's what we were promised. Nobody's rooting for them to fail, but we're just going to continue to note that for something that tried to bill itself as so turnkey coming to Wisconsin, it's still been anything but that. Tom joins us on the phone this morning. Tom, good morning. Thanks for hanging in there.
Good morning, Pat. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. And the one question I'd like to ask all Wisconsinites and all people that are listening to this radio show this morning is, take your income that you make and tell me, is your income closer to the poorest person and the homeless person on the street, or is it closer to Widow Hendricks, John Uline, John Menard, those people? Because I know I make good money, and I'm here in Southern California, but my income is still closer to the poorest person and the homeless person on the street than it will ever be to the billionaire class. Thanks, Pat.
You bet. Have a great day. Thank you for, again, pointing that out. I mean, again, those things that I think history looks going to look back on and say, how did it take so long to convey to people just how crazy rich the super rich have become, and yet they still continue to get all of these special favors? I mean, I'm looking at baseball signings this week, and yeah, these are great players. And is $350 million too much? Well, maybe not as a percentage of what the baseball club is making. But again, these are people making $350 million. And so if you were to take the wealth surcharge that Elizabeth Warren was talking about, you would be able to do so much more good by having the super rich pay that much more. And those baseball players would still have around $350 million to play with. Robert in West Dallas, you're up. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Pat. Quick question. So the assistance that's given to Foxconn, we're not really sure what the company makes. Is there any way to track that some of that state assistance isn't going to dark money groups or right-wing groups or Republican politicians back to the campaign?
Well, I think as we just heard from Matt Rothschild, it would be tough. I don't want to say impossible to connect the dots, because again, we learned how you can connect the dots from Tim Michaels' brothers to the Republican Party of Wisconsin to the Tim Michaels campaign. But, you know, candidates have to file financial reports and spending reports. Once we give that money to Foxconn, you know, it's supposed to be used for, you know, jobs and production and everything else. Now, whether the executives at Foxconn and the workers then take some of their money and put it in would be another stretch altogether. But I think what I'm really getting at here is we should look to see if Foxconn anywhere and anything allied with it has a political action committee someplace. And if so, where's that money going? You raise a great point, Robert. Thank you so much. Have a great day. So again, we'll continue to follow, to monitor, and just remind you that we have this thing that could be good for the economy eventually, but it was just set up so poorly. I'm only going to spend a minute here to tell you that this is the 10th anniversary of the Sandy Hook massacre in Newtown, Connecticut. These are children, 20 students and 6 educators who were killed. The students would be 16 or 17 this year. They would be high school juniors. And, you know, there's a new memorial There will definitely be ceremonies today. And there also will continue to be activism in looking for ways to try not to let this happen so often. And really, that is the big tragedy, is that school shootings, mass shootings still happen with near regularity. And I remember in the wake of Sandy Hook, looking at the possibility of the first gun safety updates in decades, and it got 57 votes in the Senate, but it died because it needed 60 to overcome a filibuster, which Ron Johnson and others took part in. As far as I'm concerned, that day, those 43 who voted against, blood's been on their hands ever since with each of these shootings. Now, in the meantime, there has been a tipping point in gun safety. Again, more advocacy at the national level and at the state level. And after mass shootings last spring killed 21 people at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, and 10 people at a supermarket in Buffalo, Congress passed the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, the first major federal gun control law in decades. It expands background checks for younger gun buyers, boosts school mental health programs, and promotes red flag laws to temporarily confiscate guns from people deemed dangerous. And again, a reminder, too many Republicans, Tim Michael loudest among them, oppose red flag laws and went so far as to basically accuse women of making up domestic violence accusations just to get their husband or boyfriend's guns confiscated, when that's not how the process works at all. Well, I'm going to move on to another story in Minnesota, and it may not make you feel any better coming off of Sandy Hook, but I noticed this a few minutes ago, and I thought it was worth passing along. The fact of the matter is the right wing is getting more and more extreme, loudly so, more and more shameless. Redistricting gives them a sense of, you know, arrogance and power that they don't have a problem exercising. So there is a new Republican legislator in Minnesota, Walter Hudson, whose background is conservative talk radio. And during a meeting on Sunday, conducted by the group Mask Off Minnesota, Hudson compared medical professionals and others who recommend the COVID-19 vaccine to plantation owners who, quote, enslaved Black people. The plantation owner who said, "I need cotton and you're going to pick it," is morally equivalent to the person today who says, "I don't want to get sick, so you have to take the jab," Hudson said. And just to make sure he wasn't understood or misunderstood, Hudson repeated it. He said, "I want to be clear. I mean exactly what I just said, okay? It's not a gaffe. I mean it. You are the equivalent of a plantation owner who enslaved Black people and forced them to work for you if you today, as a medical professional or just a member of the populace, demand that your neighbor take a vaccination to keep you safe." That is what we're dealing with in this day and age. And people who are making comments that, as the Minnesota State Democratic Party chair said, comments that are abhorrent, but ultimately not surprising. Ken Martin said that the Minnesota Republicans continue to double down on crazy conspiracy theories, misinformation, and in this case, fabricated false equivalencies. They clearly did not take their lesson from the 2022 election. But Representative Hudson is going to take his seat in the Minnesota legislature come January 3rd. And that is what we're going to have to deal with. Again, one of those moments where it's sad that it's radio, because we find ourselves, a little voiceless or a way to react to this. All right, let me tell you what some of the stories that are up on the Up North News website at upnorthnewswi.com. Don't forget the WI. Now, this one is especially noteworthy, especially when you consider how many members of Congress we just discovered were exchanging text messages with Mark Meadows, chief of staff to President Trump, urging a varying range of actions prior to January 6th, including declaring martial law. These are folks that swore an oath to the Constitution, but do they really know it? And so on our website, the headline's pretty simple. Would you pass the U.S. citizenship test. More than 50,000 immigrants living in Wisconsin are currently eligible for U.S. citizenship, Christina Lurie writes. It's a long process. It involves residing in the U.S. 3 to 5 years, proving they can read, write, and speak English, and pass a 10-question oral civics exam. That last part is not multiple choice. It's a series of 10 questions selected by an immigration officer, and immigrants need to answer 6 of the 10 from a total list of 100 correctly to pass. How would you do on it? You go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and find out. We will talk to Todd Alba after this.
Get along down the road. We got a long, long way to go.
All right, Todd Alba joins us now. His show comes on next at 8 o'clock on most of the Civic Media family of stations. How you doing?
I am well. How about yourself?
I'm not well, but I'm trying to overcome whatever flu bug or whatever we've got here. You know, still testing negative on COVID, so that's good.
Yeah, me too.
And, you know, I don't get out of the house very much anymore. I have a great work setup, but apparently it makes me, you know, just so tender and vulnerable now to all the little bugs and goblins out there.
I know, right? I mean, I'm so far COVID negative as well, but yeah, I got a little something in the chest. I was, you know, hacking up a little bit in the shower this morning, but I feel better now. A little shower, a little orange juice. I'm actually staying in a hotel because my younger godson who graduates from UW has been staying with me this semester. He graduates on Sunday, and then he flies to El Salvador to see his maternal grandmother on Monday. And I'm like, I can't risk the chance. Mm-hmm. So I've been staying in the beautiful Hampton Inn in downtown Madison last night, and will do so today. So hotel, I tell you, Pat, you know, hotel living, Herb Cole had something there. You know, I mean, it's not so bad.
Well, no, I feel like we do because we're on the road all the time with, you know, one daughter in Idaho and one daughter in Michigan. So we're all the time on the road here and there. And, you know, if you are an experienced traveler and you know how to handle it, it's not so bad. Like even last night, my wife, who works 45 minutes north of here in Rice Lake, you know, she got a hotel room rather than, you know, risk the crappy weather that's happening outside my window here right now. Right. And if you find a good chain or if you find a place that you like, and you make it work for you, you know, that's okay. It's right. You know, not the worst thing if you have to do that for a day or two to keep somebody else from getting sick at a very important time in their lives. I really tip my cap to you.
Well, you know, you try, we're all in this together and just help each other out. So, yeah, you know, I like consistency. I like clean hotel rooms and a good bed and a continental breakfast. And, you know, nobody pays me to say this, but you know, the Hampton Inn, hard to beat.
Yeah, no, I've shamelessly plugged IHG, which mostly is because we stay at, it seems like, every Holiday Inn Express around. Right. And we, you know, we are big fans of that too. We've been to other hotel chains where we're like, ooh, we have to really be hurting, you know, if we're going to stop there.
Pat Kreitlow, former anchor on TV, former state senator from Wisconsin, and he has stayed at a Holiday Inn Express.
I have indeed stayed at a Holiday Inn Express many times, which gives me all of these correct opinions that I like to share for 2 hours every morning. What have you been sharing on the show lately, either as topics or guests, especially because I want our folks in Waukesha and Madison who get different shows at 8 o'clock. I really want them to get over to civicmedia.us and listen to you as a podcast. So tell us a bit about the shows recently.
Appreciate that. I've been following this story at UW Richland, the announced closure by the UW system in Platteville to close the campus at Richland. Had the vice chair of the Richland County Board of Supervisors on yesterday talking about some of the resolutions they passed. They met again last night, the full county board, and passed a resolution basically informing State Senator Howard Markline, Representative Tony Kurtz, the governor, UW President Jay Rothman, basically informing them of what's going on and saying, hey, give us some time here because the things that have led to this reduction of enrollment is beyond our control. And so we've been talking about that a little bit. And then on the lighter side, coming up today, a high school friend of mine, Chris Pauls, will be on the show. He worked for The Onion for quite a while and is now a published author himself. And so he lives here in Madison. And so Chris Pauls will be our guest today on the show.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. And I'm also glad that he's on your show and not Pat's show, because I'm sure he'd be laughing and it would not be fun.
Yeah, we discussed earlier how having all these coughing spasms, I literally feel like I'm going to split my sides, which is a nice euphemism we say when somebody is side splitting with laughter. Not literally. I'm really looking to avoid that on this. And sounds like you got that same hack. So
yeah, I do. It's weird. But yeah, that's what we've been talking about.
But hey, if we can do this now while we haven't seen the sun in, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 days. And, you know, if we can get this all out of our system, you know, in time for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Okay, if that's the price we got to pay, well, we can do it.
Yeah, absolutely we can. Also, next week on Tuesday, we have a former, I believe, a former colleague of yours. It was Neil Kedzie. Did you guys serve at the same time in the state Senate?
Yes, we did. So, yep, former Republican state senator.
Yeah, former Senator Neil Kedzie. He is now the president of the Wisconsin Motor Carriers Association. And we were talking last week about Elon Musk rolling out his all-automated 18-wheeler. And so Neil Kedzie will join us and talk about motor carrier issues and the challenge to find a labor force and what that all means to Wisconsin's trucking industry, to the national trucking industry, because as you well know, almost everything that we purchase or buy or use at some point has been on a truck. And so these are our issues for not just labor, but also just the industry and consumers as well. So we have another former state senator joining us next week.
Where are you on driverless cars or self-driving cars and trucks and things like that? I kind of think like it's probably inevitable, but yeah. How much mayhem is going to happen between now and then? And I'm sure there are other people saying, why would we even pursue this when we know what could possibly go wrong?
I mean, I kind of split the baby on it, because like I think it's kind of, in a way, it's cool. A friend of mine out in California has a Tesla that I was able to ride in a couple of years ago, and it is pretty cool. I drove it, and I mean, it's more computer screen and whatever. I mean, his at the time, when it was 3 years ago, you could almost just sit there and it drives itself. It was freaky, but it was also fun. But you know, I don't know. I'm scared of like the dog robots and then all this kind of stuff. I mean, I just scares the crap out of me. So I don't know. I think it's cool. I think for certain, especially for disabled folks or others, I think driverless cars or fully automated cars are certainly a wonderful thing. But I don't know, an 18-wheeler with no human behind the wheel. I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's almost like we want to put them on a separate path, in a separate lane, maybe with some metal rails to keep them, right? You know, on track. Maybe I'm thinking outside the box, you know, like, from 200 years ago,
like a Disney, like the monorail at Disney or something like that, you know, where
exactly. Something like that. I remember in the legislature, again, we're going back 15 years now or so. Yeah. And I don't remember if this got to be an actual bill we passed or if it was how it was a discussion point. But there was this discussion point about requiring electric vehicle owners that their car artificially has to make some kind of noise, because people were being struck and killed because you normally can hear when a car is approaching, but you can't with these.
I remember that bill. I can't remember whether it was passed or whether it was signed into law or not. I don't think so, but I should check on that. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I'll be in a parking lot at a mall or something, and that's a whole other story for a different day. Back in high school, I did get hit by a car. So someone who's been hit by a car, I'm a little conscious of it. And I mean, I've nearly been hit because I don't hear it.
Yeah. In my case, I did get hit lightly by a car while I was out for a jog. The driveway was obstructed and the driver just came barreling out the driveway.
Oh my gosh.
Again, it wasn't serious, but I can say that's the one time I actually did the full Starsky and Hutch or Dukes of Hazzard move of rolling over the hood. And then I just kept going after that because it wasn't worth it. But
really?
I wish somebody got it on video.
Whoa, Pat Kreitlow, $6 million man.
There you go. Todd Alba, you hear him 8 to 11 on most of the Civic Media family of stations. You have yourself a great day.
You as well. We'll see you on the other side of the break on my show.
You got it. And again, for those of you in Waukesha, Earl Ingram is up next. In Madison, it's Stephanie Miller. And you ought to look up Todd's show and all the rest at civicmedia.us. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow. Make a friend. Can't we all get along?